from people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for MacBreak Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is MacBreak Weekly, episode 32, for March 6th, 2007, The Canary Trap. It's time for MacBreak Weekly, and our dear friend, the late departed Alex Lindsay, would have loved to have been part of this show. I don't know what that
might have been. He's not dead.
Oh, he's just gone. Gone, but not forgotten. He'll be back next week. Scott Bourne is here, as you can tell, from PodcastingILifeZoneTricks.com.
You said last week you were going to get this right.
PodcastingTricks.com. iLifeZone.com. And
thank you.
TalkToAHootersGirl.com.
Which is going to be coming soon to a Hooters bar near you.
He has a concept for this show that I don't think we will ever use. But we do want to say that we're feeling a little constrained by the clean tag. So we're going to remove the clean tag and let our freak flag fly, so to speak. Speaking of which, being a freak flags, yes, you knew, it was Merlin Mann. Hey, Merlin!
Hello, Leo. How are you?
Flies!
I'm going to pull out all my best Red Fox now. I'm going totally Red Fox all the time on MacBreak.
Also, one of our, it's funny. I don't think I've ever done a show with John Foster except for their live one at Mac World because he's usually the guy who fills in for me, but I'm so glad we could get together. He's filling in for Alex Lindsay today. John Foster, how are you?
Very good. Nice to be here, everybody.
Ah, he's sounding so clean and crisp and beautiful. And speaking of beautiful, the man in the hat, the last man in the world to be wearing mutton chop whiskers, Mr. Andy Anatko from the Chicago Sun-Times. Hey, Andy.
Buttocks.
Booby.
Already.
It's the 10:30 p.m. show, everyone.
Turning it into a zoo.
That lovable sitcom character you know from The King of Queens has left Las Vegas. The filthy song stylings of Mr. Red Fox.
All right. Let's
hi, nice to be here,
let's
everybody.
Not
thank you.
Too aggressively bust the clean tag. We'll work our way up to
Yeah, I love this. We had this little pre-show conversation. We're just going to go light blue, and I thought to myself, yeah, right.
Light blue. It's dark blue already. News stories. Well, I woke up this morning, and that's a news story in and of itself, but iTunes 7.1 was waiting for me on my hard drive. Anybody? I haven't installed it yet. Anybody? Is this just another one of those updates to fix a hole in the DRM, or is there more?
Nope.
It's mostly a colorful one. It's basically to support Apple TV. Plus, when you that feature you don't use of flipping through albums in
cover
3D,
flow.
You can now use it full. Yeah, cover flow. You can now use it full screen.
You can.
Yes, you can.
That's what I'm saying. If you don't use it.
All right. Excuse me. Exactly.
You can now not use it in a full screen mode.
It's only 4 in the afternoon in the East Coast. I've only been up for like 3 hours. Go easy on me. I've only had four Cokes. I'm not really caffeinated yet.
Get your coffee in you. So, Scott, you've been using it. And I like CoverFlow, but you're right. It isn't the best way to browse your music. It's just pretty. That's all.
No, but it is pretty, and I use it all the time. But what was really exciting to me, because I've really been enjoying the Apple games on my iPod, is there's all sorts of little hidden text links in there which lead us to believe that when the Apple TV finally ships sometime around Vista 2.0, we're going to actually be able to do games on Apple TV.
You're sounding a little bitter about the slippage. It should be, they said March 15th, right? It should be out any day now.
Yes. Well, you know what? I want them to get all that out of their system because the iPhone, by God, is going to ship on time.
Better be on time. John Foster's our resident hacker. Have you looked into the resource fork yet of iTunes 7.1?
No, I just downloaded it just prior to being on the show, and I thought I might have a bit of time to look, but
I do have the scripts in front of me.
I opened it, and it was like, huh, it's iTunes.
Right. So what are you looking at, Andy?
I say I'm on AppleInsider.com because that's where I found the strings. It has wonderful things like, are you sure you want to sync games? All existing games on the Apple TV will be replaced with games from this
Excellent.
iTunes library.
I could finally play Bejeweled on my Apple TV.
Exactly.
Yeah. What are the? Has anybody? I have Bejeweled on my iPod. It's the only one I spent the money on to download. They're not that expensive, but it's hard with the click wheel. Are there any great games for the iPod?
Hold'em, Texas Hold'em.
Really?
Oh God.
It is. It is great. It's a wonderful game. And
oh, it's a wonderful game. But do you want to be the nth person of our generation to play Texas Hold'em? Who, after just seeing it on TV, or are you? I'm sorry. Are you real?
I'm waiting for baseball to make a real recurrence. You know, I think more.
He's
wild
from a different generation, yeah. So he's.
Andy, I've been playing poker longer than you've been alive.
Really? Are you? Cool. And have you been playing Hold'em all that time, Scott? Or are you?
I've been playing Hold'em since I was 4.
Really? No, we're talking about a card game.
I believe your elementary school switched to a credit system after you wound up with everyone's 75 senses.
I've been speaking in hyperbole since I was 2.
I've got
Sudoku, and I never play it.
It's the interface.
That's a terrible idea. That I don't know why I bought it. I don't know how I ever thought a click wheel and a do button would be fun.
That's the
for
problem.
Sudoku.
I love Sudoku.
Yeah,
but it's
you know what's good. You know what's good for that is paper.
Yeah,
but I mean, even on my Trio, I got 3 different versions for the Trio.
No. You need
and
a
pencil. It's like pulling teeth. Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
You got to be Pac-Man able to write little numbers.
Pac-Man actually works well.
Which does it?
Perfect.
Hangman.
Sure. Pac-Man.
Because they don't use the scroll wheel. You can just tap up, down, left, right.
Oh, that makes sense because it has the world's simplest user interface.
Right. Cool. All my patterns work.
If they could use 2 iPods and you could play Robotron.
Did you say the patterns still work, Andy?
Yes, the patterns that I learned in junior high school still work.
Now, that's important to know. That's valuable information.
Exactly.
I dropped a lot of quarters into Pac-Man, but I never got any patterns. It must have been the White Russians I was drinking at the same time. Kept the patterns out.
Please, Mr. Laporte, keep your drink off of the game.
It helps if you're not trying to pick up bowling alley women while you're playing.
Bowling alley.
Did you play the cocktail version?
Yeah, the tabletop
version.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
You got your White Russian right there. Your joystick in your right hand, your White Russian in your left. You're really, it's kind of made for that.
Sounds like a lot of Scott's weekends. White Russian, joystick in
the
hand.
I don't know how I can see the Pac-Man with the young lady sitting on the table. But
for me, it was Tempest. Tempest took a lot of money out of it. Tempest and Defender, later Stargate. Those are the games that really took
I got
out
the,
for me.
I think, you know, it's funny. You could always tell, at least I could always tell, what age cohort, within a couple of years, anybody was from what TV shows they still love. You know, Brady Bunch. 30s, you know, I mean, there just was obvious, right? And now I think you probably could do that with arcade games. For instance, I've figured out all the patterns in Battle Zone. Do you guys ever play Battle Zone?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, the tank game, the Atari tank game. Yeah. That was an awesome game.
Wasn't that fun?
And Red Baron. Oh, the other one. Remember with the planes?
Yes, but Battle Zone was vector graphics, so it wasn't pretty, you know. And I doubt we'll see that.
Those games were great, and even Asteroids. I mean, it was such a perfect use of the available technology. You know, they. Is that Space Invaders?
I don't know what it is. Yeah. Yeah, you go.
No, you're exactly right. There's a generation who, like, all their cultural touchstones from childhood are based on movies. They're the generation that's all based on cars, all based on music. For like now there's a whole generation that's all based on video games, which is why MAME was like such a huge impact on at least my life.
And the first NES.
Oh my God, they've got Tapper, not even like the Mountain Dew version, but the actual Budweiser version. Cause I used to play Tapper like every single day.
So pathetic.
Never occurring to me that my God, Budweiser is putting their logo in front of an 11-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And I'm paying for the privilege. Something is evil about this.
Hey, you don't want to give Mountain Dew to 11-year-olds either. Frankly, I'd rather give them Bud.
Have you seen the results of that?
No.
Helps you pay to play faster.
Yeah. Diabetes, type 2. So, and a caffeine addiction that just won't quit.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, as I listen to this conversation, it just marvels me that any of us have ever actually been able to date.
Who's dating?
Yes, date? I've been dating lots of the women.
You know,
yes.
at any point in time in our life.
I might have to leave early because I've got 3 of them lined up outside.
The fact that we were able to actually date a woman at any point in time of our life is a freaking miracle.
If my wife actually listened to anything I ever did, I'd never have a chance.
The good news is, and this isn't really a Mac store, but Commodore is back, and they're going to be making gaming machines.
No way.
Yeah. Well, somebody bought the name. I doubt it's the actual Commodore.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they got some engineers who are really, really hot about that. There's a... you know how popular those joysticks with integrated like game outputs?
Yes, they're huge.
Those are awesome.
They produced one for the Commodore 64, and the team of engineers that produced it were such fans that there is actually a Commodore 64 full emulation mode that apparently you can like clip one diode and you will get a Commodore 64 prompt and you can load binary files. You can really, wow. It becomes a full Commodore 64 computer. You can attach devices to it. It's
actually, ironically, my Mac software pick this week is going to be an Atari emulator, Atari 400, 800, and I guess it's an FX emulator. That's just great.
Those are the good old days.
I love
those. Did you see the Lisa emulator that was floating around?
Oh, that's what I want. I could never afford a Lisa in my time, but
they like enter a year between 1983 and 1995. I just caught this on the Ultimate Apple weblog this week, but it's so, and there's something really kind of refreshing about a computer that says, "Nah, you're not going to need this after a few
95,
years."
95, we're gone. We're history.
We're not going to blow a couple spots for that. Yeah, 95.
It was 10 grand that computer. $10,000.
I knew someone who had one of those, and it looked almost like a K-Pro, right? It kind of had that kind of weird form.
It was like a tall K-Pro because it had a bigger screen. It had some.
But it didn't have a handle
no,
on it.
No, you wouldn't carry it around.
No.
There were some bad design decisions. For instance, the Twiggy drive that it used, you know how these floppy disks would have an opening where the read head would be? It was right where you'd put your thumb as you inserted the floppy. Not a good design.
Right. As a matter of fact, the Apple shareholders successfully sued Apple largely about the Lisa fiasco, chiefly because they kept saying that the Twiggy drives worked, when actually not quite so much.
not at all, depending on where you put your thumb.
Well, the original Mac.
They're decorative.
The original Mac 128, if you look at the metal and the case, it was designed for a Twiggy drive.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. I actually saw a picture of a Twiggy drive prototype Mac.
Thank God
and
they didn't put that.
Fortunately, they got wise and said 3.5 is the way to go.
Well, you actually made the point earlier, John, in our email exchange, that this is the 20th anniversary of the Mac 2 and the Mac SE, and you make the very excellent point that they were the first real. Well, the Mac 2 really was the first real Mac.
This is where the Mac got really interesting, because A, there were slots. B, you didn't have to unsolder. RAM sticks to make it work. You could put large screens on, and there was 256 colors that you could play with in the video card.
Ooh.
It was a big deal.
My first one was an SE with 2 800K floppies was my first. No hard drive.
But you could put a hard drive in it, and that was the big deal.
Oh my gosh, you grab one of those Jasmine backpacks, there's one of those 10 or 20 meg Jasmine backpacks, and you're good to go.
He's saying kids, he's saying meg, not gig, meg. Yeah.
Meg. It's
smaller than your
day.
Thumb drive is what he's saying.
The SE was a really cool computer, because back in the day when I was I was selling computers through a computer store, we would buy the SEs with two flaps, take the second flap out, and put a hard drive in its place, and we would save the customer $500 or $600 on buying a SE that had a hard drive in it.
People still do that. They buy an Apple with no RAM and they put their own RAM in, because Apple still overcharges for components.
Exactly. You know, basically you buy the smallest thing that you can get away with, yep, that has the fastest CPU, and then build it up from there.
I paid $800 for my 5 megabyte hard disk for my SE.
Jeez. I'm sitting in front of a 2FX motherboard. I have it framed hanging on the wall because the 2FX frankly stand for too frickin' expensive.
Yep. Well, that was the big graphics. Like, if you're a desktop publishing graphics person, that was THE machine to have back then.
Yeah, and it was super fast. What was it, 20 megahertz? I don't remember. It was some it was, ooh, this thing, I don't know if I'll ever be able to max this sucker out.
Do you guys remember that? I'll bet almost all of you guys remember this. Do you remember that famous article in the whatever January 85 issue of Macworld or Mac User? It said, well, you know, the Apple 10 megabyte hard drive is a bit steep at its $1,000 price, but we're confident this will probably be all the storage space that you'll ever need.
Yeah. 10 meg? You wouldn't.
For $1,000.
You could get a free thumb drive in a cereal box with 10 times that storage.
If I were not lashed to my computer right now, I would be going into my library and pulling out Ye Old Computer Catalog. That's the actual title of it. It's one of my most prized relics in my collection. It is a 1977 catalog of all the peripherals you could get for every computer out there. And I always turn to the middle page where they have all the fixed disk storage, a 5 megabyte Winchester for $5,000.
Yeah. We bought that. I talked my boss into buying that. That was one of my first real computers. It was a North Star Advantage running CPM. We got a 5 meg hard drive, and you could get a C compiler because there's enough room for a C compiler, but it would come uncompiled. You had to actually bootstrap the compiler up bit by bit. I'm looking at the specs on lowendmac.com, which John thoughtfully sent out to us for the 2FX. It was 40 megahertz, a 40 megahertz processor, 4 megs of RAM. Could go all the way up to 128 megabytes of RAM, which at the time really was amazing. This was System 6. Get ready for this. You ready for the price?
$9,900.
$9,900.
Unbelievable.
6 new bus slots. Actually, you know what? Now I'm looking at this. I only have 3 new bus slots, so maybe this isn't a 2FX motherboard.
Now, the new bus slots were kind of a big deal.
This might be another Apple II of another... Yeah, I mean, that was a big deal.
That
Whatever
was a
happened to
bus.
New bus?
Well, it went the way of FireWire iPods.
Do you remember John Foster?
Well, it was a bus that came out of Texas Instruments, and the problem was that it was only designed to go, I believe, 30 megahertz as its fastest transfer. And by the time PCI came out, with the first power PCs, there was the bus had end of life. They just ran out of room. They needed more pins for address space, and they needed more speed.
Although I have to say, given that it was competing at the time against the ISA bus on the PC, at least it didn't have things like interrupt conflicts and things. I mean, at least it was intelligent, for crying out
loud. Well, it was a modern bus. I mean, the idea was that you could just put a card in and then it would self-configure and it would work.
Amazing.
And you know, the thing with the Mac 2, when it first shipped, it was the first computer that you could put in multiple video cards and it would span correctly.
Right. That was a big deal for people who
that was a huge deal.
Monitors.
Well, yeah. And it's still a big deal because, you know, if you have some versions of video cards on Windows, it might draw the dialogue in the middle of the two screens.
Right. Not a good.
You know, this is 2007, and it draws it smack in the middle between spanning across the screen.
Isn't that what you wanted?
Yeah.
And we got more coming up on this episode of Macintosh Memories right after this.
Memories. Let's get back to the future. 7.1.
We wore 2 USB onions on our belts those days.
That was the style at the time. Wait, can we talk about HyperCard next week? That
Wait
was my
Don't get me
favorite
started.
Program.
Yeah.
I would love to talk about
that
HyperCard.
That was a revolution. You know what we should
HyperCard
do?
Was the ultimate procrastination tool in my life because I got my SE in my second year of college, and this is such a classic Merlin. I spent like 2 weeks trying to come up with this system where I could like store everything in HyperCard. I had no idea what I was doing.
Even before getting things done, he was desperately trying to get something done by dicking around with his computer more.
HyperCard was such a time sink. And remember, it came with all the clip art so that you could draw your own buttons and you could make all this.
So
and
cool.
I was convinced that I was going to be able to make this like entire like integrated system that would have all of my notes for everything in one
I miss HyperCard. I want one now. I want HyperCard right now.
I used HyperCard. One of my big HyperCard projects was when my wife was pregnant with our first child back in 92, or actually late 91. I wrote a HyperCard stack to time the contractions.
Oh my God.
Thinking, you know, I think it was handling anxiety, but thinking, oh well, you know, the best way I could use a stopwatch, but the best way would be every time I press the space bar, it would start the timer and it would make a log and do a graph. And then when it got to a certain point, we call the doctor very orderly. Let me tell you, Merlin, someday you're going to know this pain.
Leo, get away from the computer.
Hang in there, honey. I've got to zap the parameter RAM.
Just not going to zap the PRAM. Has any enterprising developer out there with mad Ajax skills ever done an emulator
on
the web?
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
It'd be pretty fun, and like you could, I mean, like it's not like it did that many different things, but it seems like a good developer could go out there and you did something like that with.
I might invest in that product if it existed.
Well, I think there's still a lot of stacks out there. You know, my dad did a whole geology stack for it about a Simpsons, a Darwin's Journey of the Beagle. I mean, there are a lot of educational stacks that are kind of moribund now, kind of a lesson for us all. In file
well,
formats.
there's a tool called Revolution from the company called Revolution, and their URL is runrev.com, and they make essentially what is HyperCard today.
But I think I agree with Merlin. We need a web-based Ajax free version, and I bet it wouldn't be that hard to do.
What I really want to see is a dashboard widget that runs HyperCard stacks. That would actually make dashboard useful to me for the first
time
in a year.
There's one use.
I got a dashboard widget just the other day that I thought was really good. You're gonna maybe I'll save this for my free file. I think I will.
It's a clock. You bring it up, and it tells you what time
it's
it is.
It's in three dimensions, though. That's...
Well, wait a minute. Let me finish, because then you can say if you want it to be an analog clock or one of two different kinds of a digital clock. Because I think a lot of people today feel there's a dearth of clocks in their life. Luckily, there's a key that'll bring that right up, and you can see the time.
Okay, never mind. There goes another file.
I love that that's like the hello world for everybody. Like, hey, we have this exciting new paradigm-breaking technology, and there's going to be a clock. So it's like, oh, Christ.
And this from a man who uses his computer to put himself to
take
sleep.
Take a nap. I know. Jeez Louise. Cue the choir.
Don't forget.
I had a great pizzazz yesterday.
Mention the TWIT code when you order your coffee. A pizzazz
25% off. I had a 20-minute pizzazz yesterday that was awesome.
Pizzazz is basically paying our bandwidth bills. Every month I get a check for about $800 from Pizzazz. So please use that coupon code TWIT and keep buying Pizzazz because it works.
You know, I had a Pizzazz yesterday at the restroom at the Metreon.
Oh, no. God. You can rock me to sleep tonight. Oh, jeez.
Steve Jobs, Spymaster. A judge ordered Apple last January to pay $700,000 in legal fees for websites that... Apple sued because the websites had released information about a product codenamed Asteroid. Apple sued looking for the identities of the leakers, lost the case. Not only lost the case, but the judge said, you're going to pay the legal fees.
Yeah.
But here's the most interesting thing. Asteroid, according to this column, this is Leander Kahaney's column. He's the Cult of Mac columnist in Wired News. Asteroid was invented. Made up. It was a trap that Jobs made up. And Alex has said that Jobs is known to do this. Release this information about a non-existent product and then to a very small, limited number of people. And then when the information leaks out, you know who your leakers are.
Does Sally have a size 48 bra or 46?
Why does it always go there for you? I don't understand.
You said we could go blue. I've been saving these jokes for weeks.
Were you breastfed as a baby, Scott, or is there something
absolutely
missing?
I think it's clever, and I think it's brilliant because, I mean, on the one hand, it's great because it is a great way to track down leaks. Paris Hilton did a similar thing with her friends to find out who was telling stories and
really?
Tracked it down to Nicole that way. Yes.
Is that how they broke up?
Yeah, that's how they broke up.
I didn't know that.
And here's the funny part about it is, like, you know, we've talked about this a half dozen times, Leo, where you talk to somebody from Apple and they just get this stricken look.
I can't tell.
Where you're like, do you know anything about Foo Bar Bat? And they're like, I love my family. I love my job.
No, I don't know nothing.
Seems like it must be kind of crazy making to have all this, like, to know that you're being fed weird information occasionally just to find out if you're a stoolie.
Kahaney points out the obvious flaw to this argument, which is that, if that's the case, why did Apple have to sue to get the names of these people? But Steve has done this. This is called a canary trap. Steve has done this before, according to inside sources.
Nope, I've been told that I've been a target of the canary trap myself, like years ago when they were trying to seal the leaks inside Mac Week. Fortunately, I'm too lazy to write about things in a timely manner, so I was actually bulletproof against these sort of things. But
breaking an embargo.
But not just for breaking an embargo. I was receiving lots of documents that I should not have been receiving. It really... Well, there are two things that threw me off. Number one, because it really smelled fishy to begin with. Number two, three things that threw me off of this.
And the four...
also, the information didn't really jibe with what I was hearing from other people about the technologies. And third... I'm not sure if I should talk about this, but hey, we're only on podcast. Who's listening? Apple at some point had mistakenly been of the opinion that Andy at AppleInc.com was one of their European vice presidents, not Andy Anatko. And so I used to get all kinds of really, really intensely insider for your eyes only status documents on everything they were doing.
Oh my gosh.
I got on Rhapsody, on everything they were doing OS-wise, on all the reasons that I get one official press release from Apple saying, oh, well, we're on track to release Rhapsody in the next quarter. Then the next day I'd get an email intended for the vice president saying, oh, well, here are the 8 reasons why there's no way in hell this thing will ever ship. in detail 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And the third time that I told Apple, look, you guys got your wires crossed. I'm not that guy. The third time I emailed it, and then knowing I was not going to get a response, I printed out a hard copy, mailed it to myself via registered mail, and kept it in a very safe place in case I ever find myself telling a judge that, really, I told Apple, please don't tell me your top secret information.
That's really awkward. That's amazing.
So you can do all your canary traps as far as you want, but if you don't pay the guy at the loading dock a fair wage, that's just, you're not going to keep any of your secrets.
According to Leander, Apple itself does the same thing. He says Phil Schiller says he's not allowed to tell his wife or kids what he's working on. His teenage son, who is an avid iPod fan, was desperate to know what Dad was cooking up at work, but Schiller couldn't say a word. Even Jobs himself. He took an iPod boombox home for testing, but kept it covered with a black cloth and listened to it only when no one else was around.
And Steve set it up so that in case he talks in his sleep, he can beat himself on the back later for punishment.
He told himself disinformation just to see if he was doing that.
Yeah. He wanted to know if he was. Can I just point out that we probably violated some rule of the universe when Merlin mentioned the words brilliant and Paris Hilton in the same sentence?
Well, I've never met Paris Hilton. I don't know what she's like. I think when it comes to conniving, probably she probably has mad skills. I'm going to guess.
There you go. Mad skills I can live with. Brilliant's tough.
Well, she's at least as good as Steve Jobs.
It's amazing. It's pretty amazing though how long this stuff can stay under wraps. Because I mean, even with the iPhone, yeah, I mean, to this day, I'm still pretty amazed that so if we take it as red, that some of the things that we saw were, as Alex likes to say, JPEGs. I mean, still, the fact that a functioning unit that he could go show to Mr. Index Card and play with for 3 hours in December is mind-blowing to me.
That would be the president of Singular, folks.
How did they get that? Along. You know, how could you? That's a lot of hands that still have to be touching that.
It is amazing.
It's pretty amazing. That's a culture of very scared people.
Well, you know, when I was at Macworld 2 years ago, I got my press credentials. And every time I got within 5 feet of the Apple booth, there were like, you know, stormtrooper jackbooted thugs that would get between me and anybody else. So this year, I didn't use my press credentials badge. I used my speaker's badge, and they would talk to me. But boy, when I had the press credentials badge, you know, if I just said, how you doing? They'd say, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to disclose any information to the press of any kind.
I was really surprised. A friend of mine was working the booth. I took a picture of her, so I said, hey, look, you're in the Apple booth. And about like a minute later, she approached me very, very timidly saying, I've just been told that we're not really allowed to have our pictures taken. If you could just make sure you don't publish it. And I deleted it right then and there because she was a good friend. But I'm like, what the hell? Are they going to be disappearing her next week? That she's going to be on the Lost Island? They don't want any proof that she existed?
Hey, there's my friend. She's on Lost.
People must really like working for Apple, though. I mean, you know, you want to keep your job. And if it's going to be take that, then I guess you do it. We have a feature. Oh, should we let me just, before I go to the feature, any other stories of interest that anybody wants to cover? We really didn't finish 7.1. I guess there's not that much to say. We talked about the features.
We hit the main points.
Will Apple TV be out soon? I mean, they finally release an update that supports it. Does that mean that we're going to see Apple TV this week?
Not this week, next week, I'm guessing.
I'm hoping.
Or maybe by WWDC.
I'm hoping I'm going to go home tonight and there'll be a UPS package waiting for me.
Yeah. Well, just hold your breath till that happens, Leo.
Well, they got...
I'm holding it.
While Leo's holding his breath, let's talk about Paris Hilton some more.
Oh, no, don't make me laugh.
Anna Nicole Smith. Now, the thing is with her and both were cut from the same starlight cloth. Did I ruin it?
Yeah, you did.
Brilliant. Brilliant person.
Brilliant Anna Nicole
Tonight,
Smith.
Tonight, on Inside the Actor's Studio, a star of actress of fine, fine compulsion from her days in Playboy.
And in 1992, you were so good as to bless us with the Guess advertising campaign.
The Foster
I would love to say, it's too bad she never got to be on Lipton. That would have been, if she had, she could have been on the Actors Studio.
I would have paid money for that.
We are honored beyond measure to welcome to grace our stage today.
Tonight you will go out and get a tattoo to remember that you were here for the evening in which Anna Nicole Smith came to the New College.
But you know what?
We shall set fire to the building, for none shall be allowed to enter. None shall be worthy.
I can just see him now interviewing Merlin after his big hit. Now, remember that classic hit, the phone guy.
This I would totally hang with James Lipton.
Oh yeah,
I would totally hang with him.
This must be.
He was on Arrested Development. He's got a sense of humor.
He was really
just not a big one. Not. Oh yeah, he was the warden of the prison that Job wanted to break out of.
Perfect.
Yeah,
there you go. This must be what it sounds like in the Saturday Night Live writers' room when they're really on a roll, right?
Except ours is funny.
Yeah.
But did you want to go?
Only three of us are cooked up.
which three? It's a new game on Mac Break Weekly.
Text your guesses to 1441. Each call will cost you $1.99, but you can enter as often as you wish.
Now that's what we should be doing to raise
funds.
There
you go. There you go. Thank you, Andy.
He just cracked the whole podcast puzzle.
I'm here to serve.
It's all about text messaging.
And the thing is, don't even thank me for my generosity, because I simply don't know any other way. It's my nature, Leo. It's my nature, Merlin.
So who's going to sign up to be a guinea pig for Mac Office?
I have to, because my copy of Word crashed like right when I was in major deadline for a book. Oh. I'm actually using Word on Windows, because it's the only copy in my entire office that's working now.
You know,
do you have to use templates or something, Andy? You can't type like in a text editor or something?
Exactly. I can't.
Oh no, I wasn't being facetious. I mean,
unfortunately, book publishers are notorious for wanting their documents.
So Riley's templates.
You're talking to a man who is. I've been a columnist for the Sun Times for over 7 years now. Every single newspaper column I've ever filed has been written using BBEdit, a plain text editor. That's my word processor of choice. That's what I use for all my weblog postings. It's clean. It's efficient. It never launches itself and say, oh, by the way, I decided to strip all the formatting from the 8 open chapters that were open the last time I crashed.
Do you, I'm just curious, now this is, I know this sounds like a rat hole, but the kids care about this. So when you're in BBEdit and you're typing for production work, are you using Markdown or HTML, or what do you use for formatting?
I'm using HTML formatting because newspapers are such a wonderful amalgamation between Gutenberg typesetting and the most high-tech, the most advanced technology you've ever seen, meaning that if you go into the press room, you will see the most advanced stuff going on. But when it comes to the interface between me and my editor, I email him text, he edits it, and he applies whatever mojo he needs to get the press guys to make sure that my italicized words get italicized.
John Foster and I do everything in tech, right, John?
That's right.
Yes.
Good old tech.
Real layout.
Hey, it's funny when you encounter somebody who's not comfortable with that, though, because, you know, of course, there's a lot of guys who are really just line editors with corner offices. And of course, they want to go in and get everything up to house style, you know, right, with the way you're italic. It's always italics, of course, is one of the things. You know, for me, that's Markdown and a single underscore at either
Markdown
side.
Markdown would be, I wish somebody would kind of adopt one of these, textile or Markdown or something, as a kind of more universal system.
Textile, for me, and this is just the color of my crystal, textile has a little bit too much firepower for what I need. Markdown is, I think as Gruber said, Markdown is, John Gruber, who does Daring Fireball, actually wrote Markdown. Markdown is meant to be easy to read as well as easy
to
write.
It looks good as text, but it also can be translated into formatted text.
And what's nice is, and if you guys don't know about it, I'll put in a quick plug. Jack, who works over at Obvious, wrote something wonderful called Humane Text. Humane Text is a service that you can run on your Mac that will turn text into textile and textile back into text, and you can hack on it to have it repoint to Markdown rather than textile. So basically, it's a long way of saying that I live in Markdown. I do everything in Markdown, and so for me, Command Shift greater than turns a bunch of text into HTML with one click.
What's that called again?
Called Humane Text.
If I do a search for Obvious and Humane Text,
one word. Right. Jack, the man who brought us Twitter, also wrote Humane Text.
You know, we had Ev Williams on Net at Night last night, and that's going to
really
come out
interview.
Any minute now. And really, Ev is a great guy. Really,
isn't he a great, kind of down-to-earth, humble
totally.
Guy?
Totally. Yeah. I found out he was drunk afterwards, and that really kind of surprised me.
He had a little wine, yeah. No, he's like, he's. I don't think he was wasted.
No, I'm teasing.
Seriously, Leo, I just want to say.
Speaking of wines, 158. Mac wines and counting on 43 folders. You started something there, Merlin, man.
That's right, Leo. I decided to take the idea that we inaugurated on Mac Break Weekly, and I said to my readers, you tell me. You know, we're always accused of being these unapologetic Mac fanboys, of which I kind of am. And I said, you tell me, what is the thing that really grinds your gears about your Mac or OS X? And people were only too happy to tell me.
Yeah.
158 people so far. And there's definitely some threads. .ds
DS underscore store. That is so annoying.
those files.
But that's only, that's only if you use PCs that you ever see that, I think, but still.
Well, also if you turn on invisibles like I in Pathfinder, you see it. And it's vexing, though, because it's one of the things that's very confusing when you give people files
on a thumb drive. It's very 1980s. It's not a good way to handle that. I'm surprised.
Yeah, totally. But the other one is Alex's Mac One, which I have taken up also, is just so many things related to mounted drives, whether that's a thumb drive or a network drive, you know. So first of all, the whole like, and you have files open, you can't close this. Also, the whole like, it disappears, and you basically get a hang for 4 minutes until it figures out that a network isn't available.
That's
anymore.
The one that drives me crazy. And I hadn't, you know, I couldn't find a Wine until I read your post, and I remembered. Oh my God, you're right, because I frequently will drag files from my Mac to my PC over my network, and if that PC is down or not there, forget it. I have to reboot. The Mac
it's a functional lockup. Yeah, it's basically you're, yeah, exactly.
Finder's
dead. But I thought that was kind of funny though, because you know we're, of course, you know I'm a Mac fan. I mean, what am I going to do? Like, you know, do cuneiform? I mean, do that before I buy a PC
or Windows.
Cuneiform Windows. Windows cuneiform.
At least with cuneiform, we get to play with clay.
That's true.
can't fall back.
It's like
a lot of people hated the Finder. A lot of people hated the Finder.
Oh God, the Finder.
Why do people hate the Finder?
The Finder is so Jurassic. I mean, first of all, the Finder it feels slow.
Slow because it's not a Cocoa app. It's the last remaining Mac application that hasn't been modernized.
Is it Carbon at least?
Yeah, it's Carbon, but its roots are in old code.
Isn't iTunes Carbon too?
iTunes is a bunch of Apple scripts stuck together.
I only say because I notice it has the wristwatch whenever it's doing something.
Oh, yeah. That's how you tell. No beach ball.
But I mean, part of this is, and everybody has a different reason. The Anna Karenina line, like people who hate the Finder, like hate it in different ways. I hate it because personally, now that I'm on Pathfinder, I just see a tremendous functional deficit for the what I would call power user ability to kind of move files around and do, you know, be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. And just that whole concept, the whole metaphor of all that clicking to get from folder to folder is just maddening. And so we route around it with things like Pathfinder and Quicksilver. But I mean, I think it's time to really write the Finder from the bottom up. You know,
we got one problem against that. Everyone, when I talk to folks inside Apple, and I'm talking like really, really high up, I really get the impression that nobody cares about the Finder. They wish it would dry up and blow away. They wish they didn't have to keep supporting it. They wish it were possible to ship a version of the Mac OS that did not include the Finder. There is not that one bearded man who will jump up on top of people's desks to get people to work and develop on the Finder.
But if it dried up and blew away, what would we replace it with?
A C prompt.
I was going to say the shell.
Again, something a lot more like Quicksilver, something that basically renders not only the Finder, but Windows Explorer type applications completely obsolete. I mean, this is an old style paradigm. I can't remember the last time that I needed to really tunnel down through a folder hierarchy to get at what I wanted to.
So the
my entire interface is through smart folders these days, and through just tapping the first three digits of whatever I need.
So the only interface would be all inside of applications. I mean,
part of it is the hierarchical nature of folders also represents the hierarchical nature of how a Mac is put together. Like, it goes back to the HFS file system, right? That's how the developers thought about it too. And so, I mean, it really would require a basic, like a paradigmatic rethinking of how the non-application area of your world, I mean, happens.
But it's not.
But I'm with you. Andy.
Chiefly, what they should do is the Newton had the right idea. The Newton operating system, have everything in a soup, and if you could do one directory structure that basically emulated that, give us one application called the File Mover, so that we could have that same, you know, really really ego boosting, you know, nerve soothing. Okay, here's an icon. I'm dragging it from one place to another. I'm confident the thing has been moved. But there's so much of the overhead mentally that can be taken off of our hands.
I would say that the whole paradigm of the Mac needs to be rethought. Because as screens get larger and larger, you've got menus that are stuck up in the corner. Well, if I'm constantly flipping my mouse up there to go get a menu, that's not going to work. You know, and the ideas that Photoshop has that are stuck in, the tools are stuck in a palette, and they don't actually, they can't be moved around, they can't be customized, they can't, you know, we're pretending that the computer is so 20 years ago, where we didn't have the screen resources or the CPU resources to do customization.
Well, this is exactly my common complaint, that everyone seems to believe as though My God, 1984, we cracked it. We found the perfect combination of user interface elements and human interface design. We don't need to keep working on this. We're done.
Well,
how can
right.
you, from, you know, we need, for we need,
time,
we need
for its time, it was.
Yeah,
it,
from
it
a
was,
five.
But things, well, that's where we're still stuck with Windows and icons and menus and a mouse. Right. We need someone to kick Apple's ass the way that Apple kicked everybody's else's ass 20 years ago.
I don't think you're going to see anything like that. That's such a wholesale redesign of the user interface. I want to have a window onto my desk here, don't I?
Well, I mean, imagine time traveling back to 1979 and trying to explain to people how a mouse would say, but wait a minute. What, you know, if my words are not going filling this, if my words that I type are not going on the screen, where are they going? How do I know where it's going? If you can simply explain to them that there's going to be these overlapping windows, that if you click on one, the computer will sort out what it is you mean to be doing inside that window. It's hard to explain something that doesn't exist to minds that are not ready to accept it yet. But when you see the idea of a blank canvas with no interface on it that simply tries to figure out what it is that you're up to, Douglas Adams had something that was really, really brilliant in one of his keynote speeches, which is that when computing first started, the 99% of all computing power was devoted to actually doing the thing you wanted to do. Only 1% of the computing power was devoted to figuring out what you wanted to do. You press a key, it read the key, and it did the thing it wants to do. As computers and operating systems get more sophisticated, that starts to inverse. Now it spends, because there's so much power under the hood now, you know, to convert to convert keystrokes to text is like maybe one fraction of 1% of a Macintosh's power. It can spend 99% trying to figure out that, wait a minute, he seems to be just like Lassie, I'm getting the impression he wants to write a newspaper column. What's that? You're writing a column about the new airport base station? Yes, we'll give you a text document. We'll automatically make sure it's addressed to your editor, and we'll invoice people. Yes, come on.
I thought she was just saying there's trouble at the mill. So, you know, that could be.
The other 99% goes to the MDS process. It's indexing everything for Spotlight.
NDRM. Yes.
NDRM.
Yeah.
Well, but what about the possibility?
Look at the way the
iPhone-style interface.
An iPhone-style interface. Well, that's actually one of the rumors that's floating around. I've seen in a number of places. Who knows where it came from? Probably Merlin Mann. But that this touch screen interface with the two fingers and all of that stuff was actually what's holding up Leopard. That's what all of Leopard is about. Anybody give credence to that?
I mean, it's a little bit of the Minority Report thing with Tom Cruise, you know.
Yeah, that's really wishful thinking. Can you imagine all the infrastructure that has to be changed around to make that work?
Yeah.
Plus, is that really the most efficient way to do things? I mean, every time I get more and more sophisticated with a certain, you know, laptop or a certain piece of software, it's never a case of using the graphical interfaces. It's always a case of giving myself fewer excuses to take my hands off the keyboard, because the more I have to start screwing around with, I have to take my fingers off the home key so I'm typing. Now I have to start pushing things on the screen. I have to put my hands all the way back down. I mean, the real ninjas are the people who know how to do a command option shift tilde escape L.
Well, that's what you want Windows for. Windows is totally based on that. You can do everything.
Well, a lot of people have that. I have to admit, increasingly, because I have to get behind is just these really kind of vexing differences in interface throughout the Mac that, you know, when you're first using it, you don't notice at all. Everything looks beautiful and shiny and you want to lick it. But then the more you use it, the more you realize that the way, for example, like I think almost all of us are using Universal Access to be able to tab through, you know, you can tab through web pages, you can tab through dialog boxes.
Wait a minute. Tell me about that, because I'm not.
Are you doing that, Andy?
Yeah.
And what about you, John?
Least used features.
Sure. Command Q's all the way.
I'm an idiot. Okay, so I go to Universal Access. Is it in seeing, hearing, keyboard, or mouse?
It's the first one where you want to enable.
I've enabled assistive devices, but that's only because I need it for a text expander.
Right, exactly. And I think, and then so what do we need to do? Isn't there something you need to do inside of, and then for example, inside of Safari, you can go in and say.
You tab from link to link.
Going through forms. For example, it can be—it's so much faster using nothing but your tab and your space bar. It's so fast. Anyway, all I was going to say was, this is a drawn-out point, just to say that it would be nice if similar affordances in different parts of the Mac kind of work together in similar ways. And I think that's maybe 80%, 90% there right now. But it's just frustrating enough that it can be—you know—it'll stop you in the middle of a flow, you know, because this stuff doesn't always act in the same way. The keychain, for example, acts real goofy to me.
Use the cursor keys to navigate within pages. That's probably what it is.
what it is. But I I'll tell you, for going through forums, actually, we
it's
did a
advanced
MacBook,
general.
We did a MacBook Minute on this. On the to me, I want to tell everybody in the world about the power of the tab and the space bar.
The power of the tab.
People don't know what you can do with those two things. That your space bar is a do bar. Whatever you have selected, whatever has turned like blue or gray, you can do that.
Space bar is connected to the do bar.
Dooby dooby do bar.
Connected to the tab bar.
All right, so let's do our whines. So there were obviously plenty of things to whine about, according to your readers at 43 folders, 158 different whines. But I bet we can find a few more. Let's start with John Foster. Do you have a whine for us, John?
I have a whine, and it's in general just the damn beach ball. I have 2 gigahertz times 2 sitting in front of me, yet it spins for no reason at all.
Yeah.
And I don't get that. I don't understand. And if anyone in Apple QA isn't writing up beach ball reports, you know, that's what their job should be. It's to find every single instance of where this thing hangs up for no reason.
Right, you watch the activity viewer, and there's tons of RAM available.
There's tons of RAM, and it appears to be paging out,
but nothing's happening.
And there's nothing CPU wise, so it's almost like it's in stealth mode while it's just going.
But particularly Safari, I almost completely stopped using Safari because Firefox just gives me the SPOD almost like 1/10 as much as often as Safari does.
Pop open 5 tabs in Safari and just watch that thing go for like 45 seconds.
I haven't seen it, I guess.
Like a snow day. You get the afternoon off.
That's why I use Firefox. I don't see it in Firefox, although I see beach balls from other... It sounds like it's program specific, not...
Well, it's just everywhere specific. And, you know, it'll be in stuff like in iMovie or iPhoto or even the text editor or even in something as simple as I click on a drive to go get a directory of it and it spins for 30 seconds. It's a directory. If I went into the command line and typed in ls, then it would just show up instantly.
Now do you have menu meters or something installed so you can see how often it's paging the disk?
You know what? I turned all that stuff off because it was just frustrating to me.
I actually run menu meters all the time. So you think it's paging? You think that's the issue?
Well, not necessarily. A lot of this for me is a psychological problem where I don't mind when someone's busy so long as they have a reason to be busy. It gets me a lot less frustrated when I see, okay, there's a 1K plus indication in how many pages are active right now. So if it's a little bit kerfuffled right now, okay, I'll give it 3 seconds to settle itself down. It's when you simply copy 2 files from, you know, from a keychain drive to a hard drive, and now you're stuck for like 80 seconds. You're saying, you know, I paid $2,000 for you, man. I'm expecting more from you.
The issue is this. Back in the days when we actually had human interface guidelines as a published document from Apple, we had some rules that said, if you're going to be less than 10 seconds, you can spin the clock. If you're going to be more than 10 seconds, you got to put a dialog box up with the progress bar. And if you're going to be really long, then you got to do guesstimates on time. And those were rules. We had, as developers, we had to go and use those things.
Do you think, though, that I have to say, I think it's more like a endless loop or a hang. I think maybe they're not putting in timeouts, but I don't think it's an issue of responding properly to the user. I think they're hung.
Well, whatever it is, if it's a system issue, then these things need to be fixed. And, you know, I hate that it's one more time, like, oh, well, we'll fix it in 10.5, but because this has been going on continuously for 5 years now.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, in fact, yeah,
you can watch this in the activity monitor, and you'll just see these random, if you're running all processes showing, like not just my processes, you'll just watch this little, I don't know, this little folk dance of processes, and it's not clear at all which one of them is the problem. Like kernel task, okay. Thanks. Right. That helps a lot.
Right.
It's like, well, your car doesn't run because you got a problem with your car. Okay, thanks.
All right, beach balls. That's John Foster's Mac wine. And we wanted you to know that if you're a Windows user, you're not allowed to use these to complain about the Mac, although the beach ball is the number one thing Windows users use against us. Annie Anatko, do you have a wine?
I'm almost past the point of whining about Leopard at this point.
Where is Leopard?
Exactly. Well, Apple, I mean, this is part of the frustration and the brilliance of Apple when they're not going to announce a date for anything until it actually appears on your doorstep. They've said The only upgrade they've given on the ship date for Leopard is they used to say first half of 2007. They changed that to spring of 2007, which really got me excited until I realized, looked at the calendar and realized that spring ends like 2 weeks before
June 22nd.
Exactly. And they, you know, and we still remember, you know, Steve Jobs standing in front of God and the world and all of us in August saying that, well, we're going to be showing you much, 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 much more features later on, but this is what we're showing you right now. And where are the new features that we haven't seen yet? If we are 3 or 4 months away from shipping, you would think that they would at least, you know, start to show the rest of their cards right now.
There have been pictures this week on the net of the latest Leopard build. Anybody looked at them? I haven't. I don't like to look at stuff I can't get.
I think it's really interesting that we get all excited about seeing about this Mac and that it's running 10.5.
Yeah, that's not a feature. That's not something that helps me buy.
So that's the only thing the pictures have said. They haven't had pictures of features.
No, they've got pictures of features, but I'm just saying that just in general, it's stuff like here's a configuration screen or here's a preference screen. Right. Who cares? Let's just see the real thing.
Well, I'm going to be the contrarian on this. I think it's great that Apple doesn't pre-announce. I wish they hadn't said anything, then you guys wouldn't be whining about it.
I'm not whining about 10.5. Okay, I'm just saying let's just see it.
Yeah, we'll see it when it's done. What's wrong with that?
Yeah, we'll see it when it's done. Exactly.
Not only for our own morbid curiosity, but because there are people whose job it is to buy 500 copies of this at a time. And they have to make those decisions at least 6 months before the thing is released. Every single previous release of OS X that's come out, at least 1 year in advance, Apple has again laid all their cards to the table, saying, we're not ready to really ship this yet or even really show these features, put out these features in front of developers yet, but here's what it will look like.
That's
here's
legit.
98% of what you got. Right.
That's legit.
And so I'm just worried, especially since this is the year that Apple can gain the most ground against Windows, because Vista, my God, it's like a pimped out Volkswagen Golf. I mean, it's still a Volkswagen. No one really cares about it. This is a good opportunity to pick up new users.
That's a pretty apt description.
Hey, I was going to get one of those for my new limo company.
A Volkswagen Golf, pimped out.
A pimped out one.
A rear stabilizer 3 feet high.
I'm going to stretch it so two people could fit in it.
But that underscores the fact that, believe me, Apple knows that, Andy. And if they could get Leopard out, they would get Leopard out. So obviously something's holding it up.
Someone's holding it up. I don't know. I don't know. Either they're going to pull the damnedest rabbit out of the hat sometime really, really soon, or perhaps we're looking at a Leopard that's not going to be as advanced as we hope it to be, or we're going to look at a delay. I don't know which one's going to happen at this point.
Do we have some agreement that Leopard will be a very, very important upgrade or not?
I don't
only
think
if it
so.
Comes out in 2008.
Yeah, unless they Vista it. I mean,
that'll be real important.
I think it's a very important upgrade. Look at all the background technologies we're getting in it with Core Animation, the next version of Core Sound, the next version of the display stuff, the resolution independent icons, and the rest of the UI. I think this is a very exciting OS, and you know, even if people don't adopt it immediately, it's still very worthwhile to see.
Well, what UI changes have you really seen?
We don't know, do we?
Well, I mean, I haven't actually played with it.
I have it sitting right here, but I'm not going to install a damn thing.
Who's to know what it's actually going to do? I mean, the idea of core animation being the foundation for applications in the future makes for, you know, it's as a developer that's like, okay, well, what can I do with that? How can I make the user experience much better?
And you just have to look at the iPhone to see what core animation will do for software.
Exactly, for lots of things.
When you look back, I guess the consolation is that you tend to see that Apple tends to alternate between OS releases that are intent for get developers all excited and OS releases that are designed to get the users all excited. Last year with Tiger, we got an OS that the users could really get excited about. Maybe this is just going to be a developer-oriented update.
Scott Bourne, do you have anything to whine about?
You know, I'm probably the least whiny at all when it comes to Macs, because I really do enjoy them, and because I also use them with, you know, knowledge of the giant blue screen of death as my alternative. But lately, in fact, just over the last 2 days, I've had a perplexing problem I would like to whine about, primarily because I'd like somebody to help me fix it. And I'm sure our smarter than me audience knows the answer to this. But every time I download something to my desktop these days, it stacks up on top of itself in the bottom right corner of my screen instead of neatly filling out the leftover space on the screen. I don't have that many things on my desktop, but for some reason, it just all stacks up and I get like 25 things piled on top of themselves and I have to drag them one at a time off to find out what's there. And I've tried doing everything I can. I've run Disk Warrior. I've run all the cool little utilities and it just started doing it and I can't get it to stop.
And Mr. Well,
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I was just going to say that happens to me a lot too. And usually the way I fix it is first of all, to uncover the stuff that's at the bottom of that pile, I just go into the desktop folder through my home folder. That's that way you can just see it as a list of files. Also, it seems that when I move that into another folder and then move them back, that tends to de-discombobulate whatever it is that's making the Finder upset and want to have a cookie to restore its blood sugar. I wish I knew why it was screwing up. It's just screwing up, and I just know something way to knock some sense into it.
The thing is, Andy, is like, this just started happening to me. It's never happened to me in my life. And it's just, I don't like being discombobulated or combobulated, whichever it is.
Don't discombobulate the man.
So if anybody knows how to fix that, send us an email. Let me know.
Moylan.
I am vexed by the fact that my sound settings get so kerfluffled all the time. Ordinarily day to day, I have my sound settings set so that I don't really use the microphone except when I'm doing podcasting stuff. And it seems to do well enough with putting the sound out to my external speakers or my headphones. But it drives me crazy. We talked about this a little bit many times in the past. But when I want to go use Skype, I've got to go in and I've got to go reinvent the wheel every time. I've got to go in and say, no, Macintosh, nope. Use the Rode Podcaster that I just plugged in and use that for the headphones too.
Yeah.
And then I got to go into Skype and about 50% of the time I got to remind Skype what I want to do. And what I want is something like the old school System 9 location manager. I want something that lets me remember a configuration of sound settings so that I can repeat them with one click without having to do a lot. And I want applications to honor that.
I can solve your problem, Merlin.
What's that, Scott?
You need to go to rogueamoeba.com mm-hmm. and download a free program called SoundSource.
Mm.
They do such great stuff. I love Rogueamoeba.
They do wonderful stuff.
Yeah.
And
all you do is put SoundSource. It just becomes one of those little icons in the top right part of the interface. And then you can simply click on it and select whatever configuration you want. It automatically gives you access to all that without having to go in and load all that stuff.
Good job, Scott. Nice
hey,
work.
Bubba. You know, every once in a while, the old guy gets one.
Yeah, totally. Well, you know, actually, if I get one more menu extra up there, I wouldn't do it.
Well, that's a new wine, and you'll have to save that for next week's show.
I just did listen to me plugging myself. On the Merlin Show, I just did a little screencast on how to use Quicksilver and whatever. It's a little quick, screencast. Every single email I've gotten about it is, what's that thing in your menu bar? What's this other thing in your menu bar? I have so much crap in my menu bar. It's, like, ridiculous.
Well, it will temporarily solve your problem.
Oh, no, I'm totally going to do this. Thank you, Scott. All right, my wine is answered. Leo, what's yours?
I got no wines. I love it. I am still I'm a Mac fan all the way.
You're the Mary Tyler Moore of the Mac community,
it's
Leo.
Such
I've always wanted to tell you
throwing
that.
Your hat in the air.
Turning
I'm
the world on with your smile.
Make it after all.
Da, 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 da.
No, you guys
you can
such...
reboot after a Colonel Panic.
You guys are such whiners. I don't need the wine.
You're the one who brought it up, Leo.
It's not my fault.
About my needs?
You know, whining was invented by these guys when I was gone one week. I just want to point that out.
It was Alex's fault. He wanted to do a whole show on it.
I am not a fan of whining. But, you guys seem to want to, so I'm going to let you.
But we can all agree that it's not my
classy.
Fault.
It's your fault, Andy and Iko.
I blame Andy.
I'm the bad influence. I'm the bad seed. I'm the half-breed.
Very, very bad seed.
On the playground.
All right, let's move on to, I just can't, whenever you guys mention something, I go, oh, yeah, it bugs me. But honestly, it's not, nothing's top of mind in terms of something that's bugging me. And I use my Mac day to day, and I don't find...
Lame. That is so lame, Leo. You're on your Mac all day long, and you got nothing. You got nothing that's grinding your gears. Nothing that gets under your skin.
I still can't get it to talk to my Epson multifunction printer. It won't scan images, so I have to use Windows for that. But that's about it. I don't know if that's Mac's fault or the Epson's fault. But that's not a whine. That's a niggling little problem.
That's a niggle.
The type of guy who snaps one day, and then we all find out about it on the news.
Serenity now.
I'm a troubled lawyer.
Entertainment Tonight is asking us We spotted. We said, no, he was the... He
He's
was
real
the
quiet, mostly kept to himself.
Seemed like a nice
guy. So nice
guy.
To his mother.
Never had a wine.
Had the largest collection of FedEx and UPS driver hats in his closet. I don't know. You know.
I just look
He's
good in brown shorts.
He's a guy never to his house.
What can
you
I
look
say?
Tremendous. Tremendous in brown shorts.
I have a huge collection now. Let's start with... what order did I do? Oh, John Foster first. You have a software pick for us, my friend?
I do. It's... Once in a while, I have a need to be able to bring down somebody's whole entire web presence.
So, wait a minute. Okay.
So what happens is it's a function of one of the jobs that I do. Someone will say, "Hey, I need to quote or bid on this web page or this company's site." So I need to know exactly what they have. So one way to do it is just to manually download all that stuff and go see it. Or you can use a program called Site Sucker, which coincidentally sucks the whole entire site from their web server to your hard drive. The cool thing about Site Sucker is it doesn't have a cost per se. It is shareware, so if you use it lots, you should definitely pay for it. There's a pay button on the page. I've looked at a lot of these things and I could never remember like what they were called. And I'm like, you know what I need is something just called, you know, that sucks sites, you know, like a site sucker.
Like a site sucker, right?
Yeah, and then there it was.
Would that work on the Hooters site?
Oh,
you know, Scott, God. I'm going to leave that to you to report to see if that's going to work.
And
I just just wondered.
When we said subtle innuendo, I don't think you really got the concept.
we're going for like the baggy pants humor.
So I'm gonna say that this product does suck.
Oh,
it does
that's
its job
the John Foster I know.
It does its job very well.
No, I completely agree with you. It is a very good program. I've used it before, and I think it's open source, cross platform, isn't it?
It's not open source. It's basically a shareware program.
Okay.
that goes out for free. I mean,
I'm
you can use
another,
it without
another one. Okay. All
right. Oh, well, there is another one, but I don't remember the name of it.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't. It has doesn't
have suck in the name.
Yeah.
It doesn't suck as well.
But the version turns out the version that I was using was like 1.61, and there's a brand new 2.0 version, 2.01.
Excellent.
So, there you go.
Let's head over to Andy Anatko and find out what his software... We kind of sprung this on you. I don't know if you were prepared ahead of time, but if you've got one, that would be great.
No, it's actually very timely because, you know, now that it was the new version of iTunes, and now it's got the full screen cover flow, that kind of... The reason I should admit that the reason why I don't use it is because I ripped all my CDs like a year and a half, 2 years ago, and practically nothing in my... like, you know, 1,000 CD library has cover art on it. So I wound up, now this is something, when a technology columnist says that he actually bought and paid for something instead of asking for an evaluation copy for press purposes.
Wow.
I know. Let's all take a second. There you go. See, that's the Equinux has this really great app called Cover Scout, whose job it is to analyze your iTunes library, look for any album that does not have cover art attached to it, and then help you find cover art for it. And it will not just look in CD databases. It'll look on Amazon.com. It'll look on Google Image Search, any place that might actually have cover art on it.
I like this because I have to say I've been very disappointed at the ability of CoverFlow to find album art.
Right, exactly. I mean, unless the only time that it's really one for one is when you buy stuff off the iTunes store. And who's,
but I already had cover art. If you...
Exactly. And on top of everything else, if you can't find cover art, you can actually just hold up the physical CD to your iSight camera, and it will actually take a picture right from there. So that's great.
Okay.
Of course, you know, all my Beatles albums have like the, you can see like me naked on the side, but that's still, you know, it's better than looking at nothing. Am I right, gents?
There seems to be a fifth member in the Beatles.
Pete Best finally makes it back into the band.
He's barefoot. Well, wait a minute, that's not his foot.
I call that my Stu Sutcliffe.
Okay, good. So what's that name again?
It's called Cover Scout. It's by Equinux, Equinux. It's
Excellent.
Like $20.
Excellent.
And it's not a one-click solution, but you can process like 100 albums in like less than 20 minutes. And in one night's work, I actually got cover art on 98% of all my stuff.
Excellent. Mr. Scott Bourne, software, please.
Well, I found something that's 0% of an Alex.
Cheap at any price. That's our unit, by the way, Andy Anatko, is the Alex, which is the average price of a product recommended by Alex Lindsay, which, what is that, Merlin? It's like
$700.
$700.
Okay. Almost of Alex picks are $700.
Okay. This is free. It's called Instant Shot.
Ah.
And I
found it. Has nothing to do with Hooters?
Nothing whatsoever. Why do you keep bringing that up, Leo? Man. Anyway, Instant Shot is a screen capture utility, and I found this for my 88-year-old Aunt Faye because she doesn't want to pay for anything. And she wanted a screen capture utility, and this one works pretty well. It does, unfortunately, Merlin, I want to point this out, that it does put an icon on the menu bar. But
what good is a program if it doesn't? That's what I say.
But you don't have to memorize any, like, fancy keystrokes. It puts the icon on the menu bar, so you click on the icon, tell it what kind of capture you want, let go, and you're done. It's about as straightforward as it can be. So it's called Instant Shot. Just Google that, and you'll find it.
Instant.
And the icon doesn't appear in the screenshot.
Excuse me.
Sorry. The menu bar icon does not appear in the screenshot.
Well, see, you can do it so that you get just a portion of the screen. This gives you lots of capabilities. You don't just do the whole screen. You can do like just a window.
We were talking about Snap Z Pro, which is the one I use from Andrew Welch from Ambrosia Software. And Merlin, you said that you have something that you use. Was it you, Merlin?
Yeah, my pick last week was is an amazing program called Sketch.
Sketch.
And
oh, that
it's
was
in
last
beta
week.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's in private right now. But I mean, like, this is a really good application. Right. And I think it's I hate to be all Michael Arrington because it's not publicly available yet. But once it is out, I think this is going to be the application for this. I mean, here's one right here. It's like, how often do you like want to just go take a screenshot and show somebody on your team something that, you know, is a bug in a program or something? You have the ability to go in and create an unlimited number of FTP, SFTP, .Mac Web Dev, or Flickr accounts.
Oh, neat.
Okay? You go in, you right-click on Web Post and pick which one of those that's accounts neat. You want to go to. Zing, it's uploaded, and you click then to just grab the URL.
But see, that's not for Aunt Faye. That's really
more. And
for Aunt Faye,
it's also probably not free either.
No, I doubt it'll be free, but it's for somebody who does this. I mean, increasingly, this is how we interact with the world, is through the screen, in order to be able to communicate with each other.
I know with my Tumble log, it's all screenshots these days.
Yep.
I just want to mention one other thing on Instant Shot that I thought was really cool. You can do timed screenshots.
Nice.
I like that. So that way you can get into the picture. You can run around to the other side and get into the picture.
If you wanted to look at something over time and, you know, as it changed automatically on a website, for instance.
Oh, it'll do like time lapse.
Oh, yeah, I see.
Yeah. Oh, then that's cool.
It's free, and it's free.
All right. Did you mention that it was free? Okay.
It's free.
How much does it cost, Scott?
not one penny at all.
Zero Alex's or Lindsay's or whatever we call them. Merlin, I think it's your turn.
This is a very modest but powerful little preference pane called RC Default. And RC Default does something. Now, you can kind of do this in the Finder, but how many times has it driven you crazy that you double-click on, like, say, a .php file, and it opens in, like, Go Live totally randomly instead of, in my case, TextMate?
Yeah.
Well, you know, what you can do is, I know this works in Pathfinder, and I think it works in Finder. You can go in and reassociate all of those types. You can say, always open .phps with this. Well, RC Default takes us to the next level. This is, you go in and you basically, with as much granularity as you want, tell it how you want your Mac to deal with all kinds of different things. So you say, okay, well, for example, always open JPEGs in preview or what have you. But it goes a lot further than that. So you can always associate, you can say, for this application, always open the following extensions. You can say, for this extension, always open it with the following, in the following ways. You can say, for example, you can even go in and say stuff like, when I plug in my webcam, I want this application to open.
Cool.
When I pop in a music CD, you know, if I don't want iTunes to open, I'd rather have this other application open. Now, MIME types, file types, even down to different kinds of your configuration files, like in your library, you know, you've got your preferences like com.whatever. You can have each of those open in different applications if you want. So first of all, it's just really useful as a way to go in and really, you know, trick out your experience. But second, and I picked this up from John Gruber, when that exploit came out not long ago, about launching the Telnet protocol. Remember, I think it was a Telnet protocol exploit. You can go in and, for example, disable Telnet so that if a new exploit comes along, this is a great way to kind of put a no clobber into your world so that you can't accidentally do something stupid. But it's put out by RubyCode, RubyCode.com, and it's free. And it's a terrific little app.
Well, I also want to nominate Humane Text as a kind of adjunct app, because I'm downloading it right now. I think that sounds like...
Yeah, really cool. And you can go in. I'm trying to remember how to do this.
It does Markdown natively, right?
I think it does Humane Text out of the box, but you can go in and repoint to whatever your slash bin Markdown or wherever your install is. Yeah, and then you can also then what I did, this is a little hacky inside baseball, but if you go into the keyboard preference pane, you know where you can go in mm-hmm. and do all of your own, you can go make a custom key command for turn to text. And I think it also, I believe it also includes Aaron Swartz's, you can also have it point to Aaron Swartz's Markdown back to text script.
Right. Right.
And so this is just dynamite. So for I live in web page, you know, text areas all day long. So I can type and just hit turn into HTML, and it's so fast.
So yeah, I wonder if I got the same one, because the one I got does Markdown. It's gu.st.
That's it. That's Jack's site.
Yeah.
I need to get
it does
here.
Markdown natively. So and if you do Shift Apple left brace, it'll convert it to HTML, but then it goes the other way with Shift Apple right brace.
Ignore everything I said. This does everything already built in.
Yeah. Sounds like he's updated it, perhaps. It's version 5. So very cool. I mean, I think that's going to be very useful to me, because I do type a lot of HTML. Now, you could also do this with Quicksilver or TextBander and a lot of other programs, right?
Yeah, and you can, I mean, like Andy's probably got stuff like this that he's got bindings for in BBEdit. It's very easy to do this with bundles inside of TextMate. But this is, as I say, like Quicksilver, this is universal. So anywhere you are on your Mac that you want to type a line of text, you can be anywhere and turn it into HTML, and it's so fast.
So I've been go ahead.
I was just going to say, I actually write Apple scripts to do everything like that every time I find a situation where I need to grab that sort of stuff.
Apple scripts,
and I've
good
actually
for that.
Got,
yeah.
I've got like 3 or 4 different like things hanging off my scripts menu to do all these different situations. It sounds like this is one thing that anybody can install and will handle everything.
Right. You can, of course, bind Apple script to a key as well if it's in your Apple script menu. So you could easily do that as well. Right. I wrote an Apple script. Apple script is really very useful. Windows doesn't have anything quite as simple for just automating things, and it's really handy. I wrote an Apple script for my radio show because, you know, it's a network show now, so I have to break exactly on time. So I have Apple script call Quicksilver and write in big text, you know, that great large text
when it's
time to break. So 60 seconds before I'm supposed to wrap, it'll put up, I mean, on the 30-inch screen, it's big. It'll say wrap, and then when it'll give me a countdown, 10, 9, 8, count me down to the break time, and I'm always on time now. It's very cool.
It's very wonderful. Cool. The greatest demonstration about the power of AppleScript is my latest book, because it's tips that are both Mac specific and Windows. It's a list of tips, and there's a Mac version and a Windows version in each chapter. And in the Windows version, almost every tip is, well, buy this piece of software. It only costs $10, but it does this wonderful thing. On the Mac side, it's like, well, here, I took a screenshot of this automator workflow with 3 steps to it. Yeah. Just make it look like this, and it's cost nothing.
What is the name of that latest book, Andy Anatko?
Why, it would be... Oh, God bless you, Leo Laporte. God bless you. iPod fully loaded. It's basically... The idea is that if you've got 1 megabyte of free space on your iPod, you're not trying. So this is how to totally cram it up with everything you've got inside your life.
I love that idea.
That's so cool.
Load that sucker. Not one drop of free space. Lately, I've been doing a lot of simple CSS for my Tumble log and trying to make... You know. I don't know why. I have very limited capability. I guess the less I can do, the more I'm challenged to do something interesting with the design. And since it's very little I can do with it, all I can do is change colors. I've been playing with colors and looking for complementary colors. And I found a wonderful widget that does web colors or color wheels, does complementary colors. It's called Sphere, if I can say that right. Sphere. And this may
it's
be
called
Sphere. This may be a reason to get to a dashboard widget to make you actually want to use a dashboard widget. For one thing, you can choose from a variety of wheels, everything from complementary colors to 4-tone, 5-tone, 6-tone, triadic, tetradic. You can even have a clashing color wheel. And then you can choose a variety of visions, including people who are colorblind. You can use WebSmart, WebSafe, or a full spectrum. and it will generate colors with the dots in complementarity, and then give you, you can even save it out in a form that you can open as a plug-in, as a little file that plug it into Adobe Photoshop or other programs, Illustrator. It's really handy. It's from colorjack.com. And there's a web version of it as well. You can play with it on ColorJack, but I liked it so much I thought, oh, I should have this as a dashboard widget. So if you notice the colors on my TumbleLog changing every 5 seconds, it's because I'm playing with my ColorJack.
Did you see the new additions to TumbleLog today?
No, he's added stuff again, this man.
Tumblr, our favorite TumbleLog application has added. Tumblr.com has added a couple new features. First of all, now when you mouse over, you get a permalink. So it's much easier to see permalinks on stuff. It's easier to link to stuff. Go mouse over an item, and you'll see a little, like, in my case, I get a little orange dot that appears. A second, mobile posting is in testing. So if you're not a Twitterer like we are, so and we should have announced, of course, in the meantime, now you can pull in Delicious Links, Flickr Links, anything that's got an RSS feed.
Yeah, that's neat.
You can have automatically feed into your TumbleLog, which I've got going with 4 feeds.
David Karp is a madman. He's been adding
stuff. Dude's moving fast. This is really moving fast. But then, so also now they're testing out mobile. So you get an email address to which you can send stuff, and it posts to your TumbleLog.
I love it. TUMBLR.com. Between Twitter, Tumblr, and Vox, I'm posting way too much stuff. In fact, somebody, I should actually read this. Scott Kurtz does a great online comic, PVP Online. I don't know if you've seen it, pvponline.com, on his Saturday issue. This is really going in along the lines of our clean tag being removed. I'll just read you the comic a little bit. Video conference with Chris quickly runs off topic. Hey, did I tell you my great idea for a new Web 2.0 company? No, what? It's called Pooper. Every time you take a dump, you post details on it at pooper.com. What? You describe your poop? Yeah, like Arby's was a bad idea. If you have a laptop, can you pooper as you poop? Check it out. Leo Laporte's on my pooper's friends list. This is when I know I've really gone too far.
As pooper with no E?
Yeah, of course. And by the time you hear this, there probably will be a site there. Anyways, thank you, Scott Kurtz, for that very nice plug. And I should tell
can't
Scott.
Buy that kind of publicity.
No, you can't. You can't even.
See, this is close to my idea, Leo.
What was your? Oh, yeah, it was. Yeah.
You know what we could call it?
HOOTR.com.
No, we call it Hooterer.
Because you're the Hooterer. Do you think this is going to get you free fries? Is that the idea behind this?
Free anything would work.
I think it's going to get you a lot of free email.
It would be Scott at I don't know what the heck website dot podcastingtricks.com.
Yeah, that one doesn't work.
Thank God. You don't actually publish an email address, and now I know why.
I do not and I still get 2,000 pieces of spam a day.
Join the club.
But that's partly because I have so many email addresses, you can virtually type random text and reach me.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm the same way. John Foster, it's been great having you. We thank John because even when he's not on the show, he does the show notes for us. I don't know why, but I really thank you for doing that, John.
It's kind of fun. You know, it's basically a good way to be on the show, even if I'm not. And I don't know if you guys actually read the show notes, but sometimes there's like little sarcastic things in there.
No, you're not. No, you wouldn't do that, would you?
Without sarcasm tags or anything.
Amazing. If you go to twit.tv/mbw, you can look back through his great show notes of the past. And, of course, this one will probably have show notes, too, sometime soon. Merlin Mann is very busy with the Merlin Show. And I'm thrilled that you're branching out into screencasts now, too.
Yeah, we did our first screencast. I mean, that's the funny part of something like this is that, you know, from the very first second that there's a frame of anything on screen, people get their own idea about what it's going to be. And when I said in the first video, I don't know what it's going to be, I was dead serious. I mean, we started out with interviews because that's what we had, but it's going to be, I mean, you know, you and I have talked about this. There's going to be a lot of surprises. So I think it'll be fun for people. But last week we had John Vanderslice and Jonathan Colton and Chris Weatherall and Jeff Veen. And we got some more really good interviews with people coming, more screencasts.
I think they're on their way right now. Maybe it's the guys with the white jackets. I'm not sure, but they're in a hurry.
Sorry about that, Leo.
Now that you live downtown, Scott, you've got to consider those things.
Yeah, exactly.
The comma trick is his current one. Quicksilver comma trick. I'm glad to see though that the whiteboard and Ben Franklin persist.
We do what we can.
There are some constants in this old, ever-changing world. Annie Notko's latest book is Stuff Your iPod Full of Crap, available.
Unfortunately, that URL was already taken.
Oh, dang.
Because iPod fully loaded.
Fully loaded. And published by?
Wiley and Sons.
Wiley. The Wiley
actually, it was the dad who published this one. They went all the way to the top.
Wiley and Father.
That's how the concept it was.
And incidentally, you can read his, not incidentally, it's great stuff, his column in Chicago Sun-Times. Is it every day?
Not every day. It's 4 to 6 times a week. 4 to 6 times a month, depending on how many playmates get off in the offing. I tend to get bumped for Anna Nicole stories and that sort of thing.
Anytime
but
that
you can count on me at least weekly.
Yeah, we love Andy, and it's always good to have you on the show. Scott Bourne is at my iPodcaster tricks are ready to go for you.com. No, podcastingtricks.com.
And, thank you.
iLifeZone.com, now on Podango. Podango.
Yes, at iLifeZone.podango.com. And, you know, Leo, we need to mention that you and I and Alex are going to be doing something March 28th through 30th right here in San Francisco.
Yeah, we want to get you to sign up as quickly as you can, because once we sell 150 tickets, that's it. It's done. We want to limit the size of the crowd. It's a special podcast seminar, 3 days, everything you'd ever want to know about doing an audio or video a show for the internet. Alex Lindsay of Pixel Core and Scott Bourne of iLifeZone and myself will all be leading it. We're going to have live. We're going to do Mac Break live. We're going to do Twit live from the Zium. But you have to buy a ticket, $300 for 3 days. More information than you could ever absorb. I mean, this is going to be everything, a complete core dump of everything we know about the.
What is it that Alex calls it? Bleed. It's a bleed from the ears.
Yeah.
Event.
We promise you won't actually bleed. Jeez. Anyway, maybe he wants to slow down ticket sales.
I went and looked at your agenda for that, and I am very tempted to buy a ticket myself.
It'd be worth that, it.
It actually does look really cool.
Wednesday is audio production, everything from mixers and mics to compression to, in fact, they're going to do an iLifeZone right there. Chris Breen will join you, Scott.
I don't know who's coming. Our regular crew is Derek Story from O'Reilly, Colleen Wheeler from O'Reilly, Chris Breen from Macworld, and me. You are invited and
count
said you would attend as a guest.
I will be there, absolutely.
You know, we have Alex Lindsay as our permanent special guest. Mr. John Foster's been on the show. Craig Seaver. We have, just like MacBreak Weekly, a regular pool of talent we pull from. So whoever shows up will be on the show.
Merlin, you're welcome to come just to sit in. You don't have to say anything, but we'd love to have you.
You say that now, but I show up and you're going to throw me out of my butt.
I'm sorry, right? Sir. There's no more room. You're going to have to sit outside.
Well, sir, there's an odor. You're going to need to go ahead and turn that around.
And you can get information on this at twit.tv, right, Lee?
Yeah, we have it right on the front page there.
Pixel Core has a big old page about it.
Pixelcore.com as well. Yep.
Pixelcore.com.
If you click the link, that's podcast class. Thursday is video production, and Alex is going to do a lot of great stuff about shooting, cameras, multicam. Again, compression is very important. That's when we're going to do Mac Break, because that's a video podcast, so I'll be part of that. And then on Friday, designing your show. And that's where I'm going to really kind of do a lot of stuff, because we're going to talk about content, working with guests, hosting, promoting, revenue models, and we'll do Twit Live on that Friday. So it is a jam-packed session at the Zium Theater in San Francisco. I hope you can make it. $299 for all 3 days, but hurry up, because as I said, we're going to limit it to 150 people, and you go to pixelcore.com to register for more information. And Podango and Broadcast Supply West are sponsors, and I have a feeling that, Scott, you had a lot to do with that.
Could have been.
We thank you. We thank you. I guess that's everything. Anybody have any last plugs they'd like to get in? Merlin, themerlinshow.com, 43folders.com. Was there anything else we wanted to mention, Merlin?
No, that's
I thought
wonderful.
There was
Thank
something
you.
We wanted
Stop
to talk
by the
about.
Merlin Show. Go subscribe on the iTunes so I can catch up with that Terry Gross. That's what I really
that
want to
bitch.
Do.
I hate that Terry Gross.
And by the way, Leo, it's BSW, Broadcast Supply Worldwide, just to be
Oh, it used to be West, but now it's worldwide.
Like 1,000 years ago.
Yeah, well, I'm an old timer. I remember when they were Broadcast Supply West. I've been buying stuff from them since then and nonstop. I think they're the best in the business. So,
I think that shows what a good customer you are, Leo.
Yeah, because I remember their old name. Yeah, it's BSWUSA.com. Am I right?
You are right.
See, I even know the web address. Buy hot. What else? Oh, well, the radio show, Merlin, appears on that regularly, which is wonderful. Talking about productivity, it was so funny last week. Scott, you know, I think we're going to do an Aunt Faye segment with you.
I'm ready.
Wouldn't that be fun?
All you have to do is let me know.
Yeah, well, let's
and
start.
And now that we're going to be on, we're going to be on XM, so that's really got me.
Yeah,
excited.
Channel 152, Saturdays and Sundays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, both days, 2 to 5 p.m. They're taking all 6 hours of the show, which I'm thrilled about, and then repeating it at 8 o'clock in the evening, 8 to 11, Saturday and Sunday. So you,
well, you know, my Aunt Faye is a real person. She's in her 80s, and she's probably the most technology proficient 80-year-old on the planet, and she really gives me all the ideas I get.
Well, let's do, I, you know, because we do some free file stuff, but, and you would, it would all be Mac, right?
You know, I'm sorry, Aunt Faye is on the right team, so yes.
No, that's fine, because that would be Aunt Faye's Mac's picks. We'll, it's a little hard to say, but we'll do that.
And she said if we gave her $3 because she's union, she might even appear on the show.
I would love to hear from Aunt Faye. I think that'd be really fun. Really, really fun. Thank you, guys. Now, how do we end this show again, Merlin? Because I keep forgetting.
How do we do that, Scott? Did we say it's in the can? It broke. Well, we're sorry. What is it we say? we're so very sorry.
I think we're so very sorry is a great way to end it. Here, let me turn it on for size. That's it for this edition of Mac Break Weekly. We'll see you next week. We're so very, very sorry.
I gotta send you something. And in the days when this kind of stuff actually did kind of bug me more, like actually got under my skin more, I did up one of my first 43 Floors podcasts was responding to fake voicemail messages that I'd made up from people. and it was all stuff like, I am not going to sit around all day and listen to your potty mouth about what I do and do not need to do with a Quicksilver. I thank you very much. I can go to another weblog and knows how to treat a lady. And there's one on there from exactly that total like Professor Frink guy, you know. And I believe if you listen into this episode 35, it was completely incorrect in the way that you have cited this. And actually, the bat.slash.exe would be much more appropriate, Ivan.
Well, I do that a lot in public forums when someone, like, we're doing Q&A and say, I have a copy of your latest book right here. I take issue with your, and they'll say it in a normal voice, and I'll interrupt them saying, okay, first of all, if you're going to make a complaint like that, you do have to use the nerd voice. I will take you seriously, but only if you say the behavior.
And then begin your comment with, is it just me? Is it just me, or are there a number of problematic assumptions that are made in this that will be not hold up to the scientific standards of rigor and whatnot? There's going to be a character, by the way, Leo. There's going to be a character eventually. We're working on this. We'll get the budget for this. There's going to be a running character on the Merlin Show called Brent, your former biggest fan. And he's going to be this morbidly obese guy with lots of, like, a huge dewlap and a huge beard. And he's going to be shot, like, basically next to a dryer that's running in his mom's basement. And he's going to be sitting there typing on his Dell and, like, explaining to you everything that you've done wrong and why you've disappointed him so much. Brent, your former biggest fan.